Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 628. This podcast is going out on Friday, the 23rd of January, and I will be performing tonight in Portland at the Aladdin Theater for the Fun Comfortable Tour. First show sold out. I think there might be a few tickets left for the 10 o'clock show. And Saturday in Denver, I'll be performing as well. So go to funcomfortabletour.com to get tickets, funcomfortabletour.com. And you know what we should do, Katie? I got an idea.
What's that?
Well, this is the beginning of the podcast where we normally plug stuff, you know, sponsors, we talk about things that we're promoting. You're never really promoting anything other than because you produce all the podcasts.
Yes.
So you promote other podcasts. But I think it'd be really fun if this was sort of like the community page at the top of the podcast. And I want to build the community element into Nerdist.com, but until we do that, I think it might be kind of fun, like, just go to the Nerdist subreddit. Mm-hmm. Which is just, our Nerdist.
Yeah.
And if you have events in your town or things that you want to promote, just not commercial products, but, you know, like if there's a con going on or if there's a cool thing or if, you know, like, oh, I have a one-man show about whatever, about Doctor Who or whatever, just something that you think our audience would be interested in your area, just post about it and, you know, like we'll go through, and I think this would be a good place to say, like, oh, you know, if you're going to be in Milwaukee, go to this thing, or if you're going to be in,
people have an art show or something.
Yeah, exactly. If you have an art show, like this would just sort of be like the Nerdist community page, sort of like the corkboard at a grocery store. It's like, here's a, you know, lost dog,
yeah.
Piano lessons, you know, like that sort of thing. So
I love that idea.
Yeah. So if there's stuff that you want to promote or, you know, then we'll start shouting out for people and not just promoting ourselves.
Yeah.
What are you guys going to do? Is the Super Bowl this weekend?
It's next weekend.
It's next. So is there another game this weekend?
Pro Bowl's this weekend. But what
technically, what is that?
The Pro Bowl?
Yeah. Is it just like all the All-Stars basically?
Yeah. So they take the NFC and the AFC and they choose like their best players. Or people vote on them, I guess. And then they all come and play.
Okay. And then...
I might watch it. I don't really care about that as much, though.
Okay. I had my mom come on at midnight and talk about the last game with the Seahawks.
Ugh.
And it was... Are you bummed about the Seahawks?
I hate the Seahawks, and they won. So, yes, I'm very bummed. It was... Can I tell you? It was, like, the worst game ever. Because the Packers were up the whole time. It was 5 minutes to the end of the game. The Seahawks were down by, like, 12. And they somehow came back and won it.
Now, 12 is a big number in Seattle, as we found out.
Yep.
Because 12 is
man.
12 is everywhere, apparently. Now, I am going to question the math on this, Seattle. I love your town. But there were 12s everywhere. And when I was performing, I asked the audience, like, what is the number 12? And they're like, the fans are the 12th player. And I'm like, you might want to check the math on that. And then someone explained in detail, it's because the stadium is so loud that it creates mini earthquakes. And so it intimidates other teams, and so they're the 12th player. But,
but people can't even hear. Like, a lot of times the players won't hear the whistles and stuff.
Oh, right, because they're trying to psych them out. Because I know when I got on the plane to fly back from Vancouver the next day, the captain was like, and for those of you interested, Green Bay is up 26-0 or whatever it was. And then when we landed, it was like, oh, the Seahawks won. So I don't know what happened under the comeback, but my mom came on at midnight to explain, to walk through, because she is a sports fanatic.
Who does she want to win?
I don't know. I think she likes, I think she liked Green Bay.
Okay. Who's her team? Do you know her team?
Well, see, when I was growing, we grew up in Miami. My mom grew up in Miami, and I lived in Miami when I was a kid. And so the Dolphins were always her team because my grandfather was friends with Don Shula.
Okay.
And his kids used to babysit me when we'd go down there. So I know that she's a Dolphins fan, but that's all. I don't know really now.
If she's still into them.
Yeah, I don't really know. I'm not really sure. But, she came on the show and sort of walked through and then she called Jim Rome a pussy, which I thought was really fun. And you can follow her at, and she started a Twitter account because of it, at Nerdist Mom. So
that's great. Her.
This episode is Jason Lee and Sam Trammell, they came on together to promote the fact that they are in a show called Cocked, which is on Amazon. It's basically just the pilot, but Jordan Vogt Roberts, who has also been on the podcast and is a friend of ours, directed the pilot, and they were great.
They were so cool.
So
we
much fun.
We talked about skateboarding.
Because Jason Lee is a professional skateboarder.
I used to skate when I was a kid, and I still surf now, and I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing that we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. They were great. So here's the Nerdist Podcast number 628 with Jason Lee and Sam Trammell.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
show's huge, right? Is it huge?
The At Midnight or the Talking Dead show?
See, you have
that. No, I didn't. That sounded dick. No,
no,
I,
no. The At Midnight show.
Yes, it's going very well.
It's like a huge thing. You're like a huge, like, you know.
I don't know about that, but it's going well. That we keep getting to make them.
That's great.
So that's excellent news. It's weird for me to go into a year. I'm still not used to going like, oh yeah, I don't have to freak out about the new year because I'm working. Like I have so many years where I'm like, it's January, it's real slow. I don't know what's gonna happen, you know.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
Are you guys done shooting now with the first season? You're done with the first season.
No, we've only done the pilot. Just
you just did the pilot.
Just the new Amazon pilots are streaming right now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And basically waiting for the thumbs up or the thumbs down.
So they're
go
so
either way.
They put the pilot up on Amazon. They just put it up for people to watch.
It's been up for a week.
Yeah, they just put up with no reshoots. No, like, just warts and all. Just, like...
That's cool. That's my friend Jordan Roberts does that show, which he's
fucking
great.
He directed our pilot.
Yeah.
He directed our pilot, yeah.
Yeah. What a strange... I sound like an old person, but what a strange new world where they're just like, here's a pilot, a world. What do you think?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, though, that they sort of... somewhat leave it up to the public, you know.
Oh, instead of just like two executives who are, you have to hope they're in a good mood when they see your thing.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. So separately, here are the loose connections that I have to both of you. I lived across the street from you for about 3 years.
Where was that?
In the Oaks. Oh, literally across the street from you. Like the place where you used to live. My house was on that five-way intersection.
Okay.
Right there, like right
I
there.
Miss that house to this day, man. It was such a great little piece of land up there.
My ex and I, who I lived there with, right before you bought the house and it was on the market, we snuck onto the property once because it was a gated, and it's a shockingly large...
His property after he left it.
Before he got there, it was... Robert Cray, the singer Robert Cray lived there before.
Yep.
And then he moved out, and it's a really cool house, but the property is like, it's like an acre and a half of property. It's like,
holy
there's
shit.
No, there's,
it's a really unique property. It's very Big Sur. It's got a very Big Sur kind of vibe.
In the hills. Yeah. It's
in the Oaks.
Biggest, when you're looking, like when you look at the, like if you look at Zillow or whatever, it's like the largest plot of land.
Is there a lot of flat too? Was there a lot of flat?
Maybe half of it's flat.
Holy
there was
crap.
Like a mini vineyard on it, and it
grapes.
Really on cool.
Incredible.
I had to do a lot to that house.
For schools? Like, what? Why did you, for your kids?
I mean, you know, My Name Is Earl got canceled.
Right.
I mean, you know, when you're on a TV show and, you know, the next day you're not, the $14,000 mortgage suddenly seems like an extra, extra amount
it's
of
like,
a
it's
large
like
amount of money.
It seems like 100,000.
Maybe we only need an acre and a half. Like, maybe
but,
we,
I mean, you know, really, like it was like a little cabin.
That's incredible.
You know, and then a lot of like wild California plants, and it had a really cool kind of vibe to it.
Uh-huh.
The most, like, it was a genuinely magical piece of property that when we snuck on, there were, oh God, Sam, don't die. Sam, what's wrong?
Why are you? Sorry.
Are you okay?
Is this
gnarly.
The Nerdist right now? Are we doing this?
We've been doing it. Yeah, we've already started recording.
I'm just better. I've been sick for like 2 weeks.
I was sick for a week. All the kids, everybody got
sick.
We
got sick from our kids. Then Missy and I were sick for 2 weeks.
Kids are just petri dishes. Like one, you know, if you're, all my friends who have kids are like, I know if one kid gets sick, I just kind of go, well, I'm going to get that.
They started it for sure. Fevers, flu, coughing. Hospital visits, chest x-rays.
Wow.
What?
Yeah, for the two-year-old.
Are you? That's scary.
Yeah, he was really coughing incessantly, really badly.
That's what I've had. I've had this cough.
Yeah.
But yeah, your kids, like, my kids will just spit in my face. Like, you know? Like, literally, you're like, I'm not going to get sick. And then all of a sudden, their saliva is on your eyeball.
I love you, Daddy. Like, okay, all right. Yeah, I get it. Love me from over there.
You're like, okay, I'll probably get sick on that.
Because then they go to school, and then kids slobber over there. I mean, like, it's surprising that there are not more, like, pandemic plagues.
I know.
Because of kids interacting and just switching germs and then taking them home.
They're so strong, though, man. You know what I mean? I get sick, and I'm just a wuss. Where's my soup?
Yeah.
You know, they still want to play, and they've got all kinds of energy, and we're just old and crusty.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel well. Because when you're a kid, you're so full of hope. Each day is so new and can be anything. And then when you get older, you're just like, I know I have experience with this. I'm going to feel this way for days, and it sucks, and I don't have the energy.
Yeah. When you're a parent, all you just want to sit. You know, like when you have boys, like all I want to do is sit, and all they want me to do is play bad guy or play pirate or play monster or play cop and put them in jail. Yeah. You just don't, and when you're a kid, you look at adults and you go, how come everybody's sitting around? Like, do you want to play? And now I'm that person that's just.
Well, why don't you put him in jail and then just go sit down?
Sit. Oh, that's.
Okay, you're under arrest.
Yeah. Then they want me to be a pirate.
Then you got to be a pirate and break him out of jail.
Yeah.
And then Missy, your significant other, and I did a pilot together in like 2000. Or 2001.
Yes.
That we were all convinced, like we were about to buy the houses because it was the Friends producers, and we're like, well, there's no way this isn't going to get picked up.
Oh, wait, what was it?
It was called Kiss the Bride or Nobody But You or some dumb sitcom name.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like David Crane and like it was, and like Kathy Moriarty was on the show and Leslie Ann Warren and Dana Day and Alan Tudyk, and we all thought like, and Missy actually replaced the lead actress halfway through.
Oh, really?
And she came in and crushed it. And so we just all thought, well, this is we're going on a nice sitcom ride.
Yeah,
and,
didn't happen.
No.
Yeah, yeah. That's what happens, man.
I'm so glad I don't do pilot season anymore.
Pilot season. Well, we're basically doing it. Yeah. It's weird because we did a show called Cocked.
Right.
It's on Amazon. And it's just out there. We haven't done any reshoots. We haven't kind of tailored it. Whenever you see a first episode of a show, you see what was decided was good, and then people reshot and did all this stuff. But ours is just out there, so it's kind of it's kind of interesting to see it raw.
Did you work pretty fast? Did you get through it pretty fast?
No. We didn't get there. We did a lot of nights. It was a hardcore shoot, wasn't it?
Yeah, very hardcore. Yeah.
Where did you guys shoot? Does it take place in Colorado?
Mm-hmm.
Rural Colorado, yeah. So we shot some of it in an old factory downtown, the gun factory, and we shot a lot in Simi Valley, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then we shot in what was that town that's... it's a part of LA, but it's all industry. That's where the gun factory is.
The city of industry? City of commerce.
You would think, but it's not
commerce.
Remember that place? I don't know. I think commerce is where you can play poker, isn't it?
The city of commerce has a casino.
Has poker too.
Yeah, they have a...
Yeah, I think it's has the most factories, or there's some stat that I can't remember.
Factory town? I'm just throwing them out now. I don't even know if any of these are... I think it might be factory town. Yeah,
but we kind of shot all over
it's
LA.
It's all those cities that you pass when you're going to other places, and you're like, who lives in these weird
exactly. Who
zones?
Lives here? Who lives here? Totally.
And then all of a sudden, Knott's Berry Farm. So there's a strange, it's loosely connected, but the Commerce Casino used to be like terrifying. You would pass it on the way to Disneyland, I think, and it just
looks so depressing.
Oh, yeah. It's like, well, people clearly get murdered here every night. And then they built it up a little bit. They tried to
make it a little bit nicer. Missy snuck down there to play poker.
Does she play poker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we play poker.
You both play?
Yeah, Missy's obsessed.
What is it that you like about poker?
It's just great. It's great. It's so fun. It's just a great game of like strategy and bluffing and, you know, hanging out with people, having a few drinks and talking shit. And it's fun. It's like kind of fun. You're so unconvinced.
I want to like it. Like,
you're so unconvinced.
No, it's just the times that people are like, come over and play poker. I'm like, okay. I get super serious about it. It's not fun. I'm not good at it.
Oh, well, then that's
and
not good.
We
play small, low stakes, and you know, where
this is you hearing these stories where it's like, oh yeah, Ben Affleck went to fucking Vegas and spent like $900,000. Like those are insane. That's do you feel like you have to spend that much money to really get a boner from it, or is it just the actual?
No. We have like $20 buy-ins. You know, or, you know, whatever you can, you know, sometimes more, but, yeah, it's great. It's great, Jason. You don't play poker.
I don't know how to play it.
That's why
you're curious. You're curious. I see interest.
But see, I couldn't do it for 20 potential. Bucks.
Oh yeah,
you'd want to do it for a grand.
Yeah, but then I'd be fucked if I tried to. You know, because if you lose a grand, you got to go back and try to win it back, and then the addiction kicks in.
Right. Yep.
If you lose 20 bucks, you're like, whatever.
There's an addictive there. If you have addiction things, or if you're, you know, there is an addictive kind of thing, you know, there's a thing that goes along with it that you can, I guess you can get kind of obsessed and I need another hand.
That's what scares me about myself is knowing that I have an addictive personality. There are some things that I purposely avoid. I did not play World of Warcraft online for the longest time because I knew that it was going to completely demolish my life, mm-hmm. and that I would not be able to think about anything else. And poker, I have friends who they'll go do the little poker tournaments, the regional poker tournaments, and I'm like, I'm afraid that if I do it and it clicks, like, oh, this is what this is, then it's not going to be good.
Yeah,
it's not going to be good from then on.
Yeah,
yeah. I won't play any video game because I feel like I'll just get obsessed.
How old are your kids?
They're 3 and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You have twins?
Yeah. I never call them twins, though, for some reason. But, yeah, I was...
You had ovary mates?
Yeah, yes. I mean, they are twins. They're fraternal. But they are, yeah. They're two separate egg... Where am I? Like, I'm getting set in a
You have
a
twin
weird
boys.
Place.
That's it. You have
twin boys. Yeah.
You have two dudes who were born at the same time.
Yeah, but they're not identical. So they were just two separate human beings happened to be born on the same day.
Good job for you. I mean, that was a good shot.
It was.
Yeah.
It was not bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to be proud of that.
In theory.
Yeah.
But in life, he's completely overwhelmed and exhausted.
Yeah.
Whenever I see the name Nadia Suleman or Octomom pop up, and they're like, how the fuck, why would anyone possibly... Because when kids are in groups... They're like hyenas, right? Like they mm-hmm. activate each other. So isn't it better to isolate them?
Well, there's this idea, you know, people will say, oh, you have twins, great, they can entertain themselves. And I'm like, no, because they're entertaining themselves for 2 seconds, then they're fighting, or they're playing so rough that you think they're going to kill themselves, or, you know, or they both want your attention. It's exhausting. It's totally exhausting.
And obviously, how far along in the pregnancy did you find out that it was going to be twins? And what was your immediate reaction?
I was freaked out.
Oops, hooray.
Yeah, no. I was freaked out because I have two good friends that have had twins and I know how hard it is. But we found out, first we just thought we had one. We just thought we had one. And then one of those guys was hiding behind the other one. And then we found out a little later that there were two.
Good. And you were and you were happy.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean,
it's not like you're going to slip the doctor 100 and go, so there's not just one of them? Like, you can't.
What you got.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, so lucky. I mean, it's amazing.
And yours, how far apart is yours?
11, 6, and 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm. It's good. It's actually good. People say closer the better. No, you give them a little space, they get along better. The mm-hmm. oldest takes care of the middle, and the middle takes care of the youngest.
Nice. There you go. Yeah, because you have alphas. You have, like, dominant. Each one knows.
11 boy, 6 girl.
Right.
2 and a half boy.
Right.
And she's very patient with the little one. And the oldest boy, he hangs with him. He's good.
Right.
He's not yet 14 or 15 and she's 6. You know what I mean? He's still kind of a boy himself.
Yeah.
Are you still cool to him, or are you starting to, is he starting to rebel as he approaches?
No, he's rad. He's super mellow and cool, and we go skateboarding together, and like, we've got a cool bond, which is great.
Is he good? Is he a good skateboarder?
He's getting there for sure. Yeah, he skates every day. He just broke his foot a couple days ago.
Is that a badge of honor?
He cracked it. He's locked. He's a real skater now. You know, you got to break something.
Yeah.
You got to break. Yeah, he rolled his ankle skating and cracked his bone, and he's got an air cast.
Badass.
And crutches, and he's in. He's proud.
In the 70s.
You're proud of him, too. I can tell.
I remember in the 70s having, there was a, like, when I first noticed skateboarding was a thing, and it was just basically those skinny boards.
Yeah.
That's when I was into skateboarding, but then it was supplanted by BMX bikes. Mm. And then when BMX bikes kind of fell out a little bit, and then like the fat boards came in, I could not get on it at that point. But watching skateboarders from the 70s and 80s, it just, it looks so dangerous. Like, everything looks like it's designed to murder you in some way. As opposed to now, I feel like there's real technology behind it, and you know, boards and wheels and the surfaces. But
it's pretty amazing what they were doing on those boards back in the day. When, you know, when Tony Alva discovered the first empty pool, basically. And he was the guy that said, when the waves are shitty, we can still surf. I mean, that's what skateboarding was was considered at the time, you know, concrete surfing. And the boards were sketchy. You know what I mean?
So narrow. Jason, I told you about my first board was a Fiberflex board.
Those were awesome.
With Tracker trucks, mid-size, and green Kryptonic wheels.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was obsessed with that board. And my brother, I gave it to him recently because my brother still skates.
You still have that board?
No. I know it'd be worth so much, right? It would just be badass. But I gave it to him and he was like, this board's so rad. It's so old. Like, what? And then he just destroyed it. Like, he
he skated it.
Yeah, he skated it. Yeah.
Better than it sitting in a closet.
Yeah, no. Yeah. He skated it in Florida at a skate park.
All that stuff's coming back, though. There's a huge retro resurgence in skating. Like, even my company, we're making old shapes from the early 90s and stuff. Because there's guys like to cruise around, and it's cool to see, like, even young kids. Like, 4 or 5 years ago, young kids had no idea who Tony Alva was. Now, all, like, 12-year-old skaters, you know, look up to Tony Alva now. Like, they know the history of skating now. It's really cool. It's kind of, it's all come full circle.
Are there subcultures within the skating community where it's cooler to like really go to an empty pool rather than a skate park that was designed for skaters, or is it not?
Skaters skate anything now, which is great. And, you know, and the cool thing about skating now is there are skate parks everywhere and they all have pools basically. So when I was growing up skating, we basically just had the streets because there were no skate parks, even in Huntington Beach where I grew up. Now there's 10, 12, 15 skate parks in LA. So 10-year-old skaters can slide down handrails and jump downstairs, but they can also carve pool, like skate transition. So skaters now are way better than they were 10 years ago because they're so much more well-rounded.
Yeah, I remember the cultural shift when skating first became a thing, and then just slowly watching signs go up at malls like no skateboard, like totally. They had to start.
Yeah.
But why doesn't an establishment want people skating there? I mean, like, it's more people at their establishment. Are they worried that it scares people away, or that it
like at a mall, like a shopping mall, grinding curbs and stuff? Yeah. I think messing up the property, you know, it breaks the concrete, and maybe liability reasons.
Yeah, liability.
I guess. Yeah. Or they're just grumpy because they don't get to do that.
Right, exactly. There's like those darn kids. It would be cool if just like there were skaters everywhere, like inside malls. You're walking around and there's like dudes just grinding, their rails on
just
the,
everywhere,
anywhere. Like it just could happen. You know, that'd be kind of cool.
I think some people would imagine a world where that's the case.
Yes,
where there's just where it's skate. What are some of the biggest issues that the skating community faces?
I guess harassment and getting kicked out of spots.
Because I always find skaters pretty much keep to themselves. Like, it doesn't really seem like they're troublemakers. They just want to do their thing and not they don't really want to get in anyone's...
No, they just want to find a place where they can learn tricks and push themselves and, you know, and...
But it's kind of amazing, you know, like, just even TV, just the fact that skate competitions are covered now on NBC or ABC or CBS on a Saturday or a Sunday in the middle of the day, or like BMX is covered, or like surfing is covered. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I feel like these kind of sports that used to be kind of very independent, loner sports, you do it on your own, are really being more accepted by society. And like snowboarding used to never be legal, and now snowboarding, on every mountain you can snowboard.
And it's an Olympic event.
Yes, exactly.
Skating should be too.
Totally. Which is kind of cool. It feels like it's being more accepted.
Yeah, I don't know why just putting snow under it makes it more accepted as
it's the same. Yeah, it's the same thing as skating.
I mean, I would say in a lot of instances it's equally, if not, I would say actually more dangerous if you're skating over concrete, you know, like you basically, if you fall, I mean, at least if you're on snow, I mean, of course it's going to hurt, but you get a little bit of you get a little bit of a frictionless slide as opposed to thud.
Yeah,
you know?
Concrete hurts a lot more than snow. That's for sure. That's for damn sure. I can attest to that.
Skating is so dangerous, man.
What?
I mean, it's so dangerous. I mean, you can even just hitting a little. I remember I kind of like in college. I was like, yeah, man, I'm gonna start skating again and skate to class. And so I got my board up in college. And like the first day I took it out, I hit a little pebble, and my board stopped, and I went flying, you know. And I was like, okay, never again, you know. I mean, it almost broke my elbow. I mean, what about the little pebbles? Isn't that? I mean, you know, do you know what I'm talking about?
The pebbles are the killers, man. That's the ironic thing.
Like, I mean, right?
You can be the raddest skater and break your wrist hitting a pebble.
Because I didn't know if, like, because you were a professional skateboarder, somehow, like, the pebble doesn't affect you. But the pebble's the pebble, right?
No, I've had some fights with some pebbles over the years, for sure. Yeah.
Professional skaters are still bound by the laws of physics.
Like, yeah, that's right.
But still, like, you never see that in videos where, like, some guy, you see guys doing radical crashes, but you never see the pebble crash.
Where it just
it's a real
because from, if
hazard.
You're taking video of it, it would be a seemingly invisible barrier has halted the board and completely transferred the momentum to the human being on top of it.
Right.
What was your worst skating injury?
I broke my pelvis and that hurt a lot.
Of course.
Yeah. Broke my wrist. Really bad shinners, stitches, sprained wrists, sprained ankles, knocked my head around a couple times. Yeah. And you just keep going.
Knocked my head around a couple times. Concussions from...
Yeah, that's why I don't even know where I am right now. We're in Van Nuys, right?
We're in Van Nuys, California.
Okay, good.
Yeah. This is a pornography audition.
Right.
That's why there's a couch over there. Did you learn anything from skating that you felt like you could take into, like, were there skill sets? Like, what is it? Basically, what I'm trying to do is create an environment so that people, when they have to argue to their parents, this is why skating is important to me, they can say, because I could learn this or this or this.
Wow. That's a damn good question. Oh, man. In terms of applying it to something else?
Yeah, resiliency or focus or...
I mean, at the very least, confidence that you can do something, that you've done something, you've established yourself as being good at something, and, you know, going into the acting thing, at the very least, I had a sense of when I take something on, I think I'm pretty good at getting it done,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also being around crowds of people having competed in front of thousands of people, and then being on my first set and being, you know, I was a little less nervous maybe, you know. Yeah.
Did you find that there was a learning curve between figuring out tricks on your own and then doing them in front of crowds of people?
No, that would mainly just be the nerve thing screws you up and suddenly you're not as good, apparently. When you're in front of a bunch of people, you fall off your board more. And I mean... The contests back in the day were in the early 90s and 80s. They were in the big arenas, you know, and they'd announce your name. Next up, Jason Lee. And you'd have to go do your routine, and it's tunnel vision, and you're nervous and shaky, and you're falling off your... And the guys that could do it and would win, they just didn't have those nerves. Like I mean, it was really hard skating in front of people like that.
Did you have a... What did you do when you were young? Did you have a thing?
I was not in front of thousands of people.
What did you do, Sam?
What do I have? I got nothing. what did I... Well, I skated, but I was telling you guys earlier, you just go straight down and then the hill. Like, it was one of those... When I was into skating, you'd look at the books and you'd see the guys on the doing the handstands and the... You know, it was. I feel like there were two schools. There were sort of the punk rock skaters who were doing the pools, and then there were the skaters that I saw in books in West Virginia that were kind of like the ballet skaters. You know, I did the basic team sports. You know, like baseball and golf.
Yep.
I golfed for a while. I can't stand golf now.
why did the love die?
Well, I just got sick of it. I was competing, and it was just one of those things. You know, I feel like some of us have those sports. We did it as a kid, and then you give it up, and you find something else. Like, I really like to surf now, so if I have 4 hours, I'll go out and, you know, I'll spend that surfing instead of instead of golfing.
Definitely a lot more exciting.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think so.
That's weird. Usually people go from surfing to golfing. Like, it's weird that you did the reverse.
Yeah, yeah. And I would argue that surfing is people say golf is hard, and it is, but surfing is way harder.
Because how about surf golfing?
Surf golfing is easy. Okay. That's not hard. All right, that's really no. It's a good question. It's a very fair question.
So why do you think it's harder?
Well, because you don't have a playing ground to practice on. You can't golf. You can go hit as many balls as you want. You know, baseball. You can go hit as many balls as you want. Surfing, you have to wait for waves, and then once the waves come, you have to like be in the right spot to catch them because there are rules about who can get on a wave and who can't. And then you know. How long can you be on a wave to practice? Like 4 seconds, you know? Right. And then how many waves are you going to catch? 3. So maybe you get 12 seconds of surf practice, like, on a good day. You know what I mean? Like, you have to, like, to be good at it, and surfing, you have to grow up.
Too, man. The upper, it's
yeah, brutal. You have to be really, yeah. But you have to live on the beach and do it every day. Like, if you start late in life like me, I'll never be great. You know, I'll at best be intermediate. Like, that's the best I can hope for.
Well, yeah, and I guess when you're skating on concrete, the difference is that, you know, the ocean is basically the most dominant force on the planet. And it's not like the concrete reaches up and tries to knock you off your board. I mean, you have to contend with.
Yeah.
I'm about, you know, you have to learn how to duck dive properly. And I just went snorkeling over the holidays, and I feel like I drank 5 gallons of salt water, even just with the fucking snorkel in my mouth. So if there was any dynamic movement of the water that was trying to swap
it's
me up,
weird. Like, the ocean is so powerful. Like, every gallon of water, if you think about how heavy a gallon of water is that hits you with momentum, and you think about just one wave, how many gallons of water are in a wave. So if you're out when it's big, I mean, you can really get rattled, you know?
Yes.
I mean, I've ruptured both eardrums twice.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Surfing. I broke my nose and, you know, those injuries you get.
How does it – so what is the – because when I was snorkeling, I went down just a little ways and it felt like my – a head was going to implode from the inside, and then I realized, nature has dictated that I'm not supposed to go this far underwater.
Right,
and so I went back up. But what? How do you know that you've ruptured your eardrums, and what can you what can you do about it once you're on the beach?
Well,
with your surfboard,
I ruptured my first eardrum surfing at Newport Beach, and it was really big. And I just went for this wave, and I just got thrown by the lip and just slammed onto the sideways onto the water. So it was just the impact. And I came up and everything was sideways and spinning in a circle. And I knew something was, and there was an immense pain in my ear. So I could see the beach, but it kept going in a circle. So I couldn't tell where to go to get to the beach. So I tried to paddle further out because I was in the impact zone and I barely made it out. And then, because your inner ear is all messed up because there's a hole there. And then I went in, and then my ear bled all night. And then I went and saw a doctor, and he goes, 30% of your eardrum is gone.
Oh, jeez.
And he showed me the hole. And and luckily, and I couldn't hear bass. It was a weird thing. I could hear people talk, but I couldn't hear any bass. Well, it was a weird experience. But your eardrums are
fine
really...
if you like 80s music. There's no bass.
Right. Luckily your eardrums grow back. Like, I mean, I was lucky. They put like a little piece of cloth to help it grow back together, and it grew back.
That's probably
and
real
then
fun.
I ruptured it again.
That's probably real same one.
Yeah, I've done that one twice and the other one. Yeah, both of them twice. Yeah.
That's a fun day for a doctor who gets to see like, hey, this is great. You've blown out most of your eardrum.
Right. Do you want to see it? Because there was a camera in my ear and a TV, and I could see it.
Was your equilibrium off the entire time?
No, that came back, but the immediately there was like that weird. It was weird because literally everything was sideways and going in a circle, but I was in one spot. It was very bizarre.
And how soon before you got back on a board again?
That was a few. I let that heal. That was a few months. Yeah,
but even so, that's still there was no part.
I always wear earplugs now because it will stop you from getting from impact getting your eardrums blown.
See, the entertainment business is perfect for both of you guys because you can be horribly knocked on your face and then you'll still get back up and keep doing it.
Right.
I think that's what you take into this business. That's what you take
absolutely
into entertainment.
Yeah,
business.
Yeah. That's totally true.
That's a good point.
Totally
when true. When you've made the jump from When did you make the jump from
Mallrats with Kevin Smith?
How did he find you for that?
Gay Ribisi, Giovanni's mom, is my manager, and basically I was dating Marissa Ribisi at the time, Giovanni's twin sister. Back in the early 90s, I was still a skater. I didn't know anything about acting, but I was interested in movies. And Gay at the time was managing Marissa and Giovanni. And I was just the boyfriend living in the back house. I was a pro skater, just traveling around skateboarding. I want to try acting. You think you get me some meetings? Totally naive, not knowing how it works. But she was super rad. Yeah, that's fine, yeah. I had seen Clerks at the Limley Sunset 5 when people used to go to the Limley Sunset 5 and see movies.
Right.
And Gay Ribisi said, Kevin Smith's in town casting his next movie. Cool, can I get a meeting? She knew Don Phillips, who was casting Mallrats. He had cast Dazed and Confused and Fast Times, right?
Wow.
Marissa was in Dazed and Confused. She was the curly redheaded girl, right? That was hanging out with Adam Goldberg's character. So Gay said, yeah, called Don Phillips and said, is it all right if my daughter's boyfriend comes in and meets you for the Kevin movie? He's not an actor, but I think he's a pretty cool guy, and maybe you guys could do it.
Oh my gosh.
And to Don Phillips' credit, he said, yeah, no problem. I went and I met with Don Phillips, and he let me come back and read for Kevin, and I was not very good. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, but somehow Kevin thought there was something there and told me that I got the part. And I was totally shocked. I had no idea
was
why.
Because I haven't seen it yet. Is it a big part? I mean, is it...
Mallrats? In Mallrats?
Yeah, in Mallrats.
Yeah, it's pretty big yeah. Part.
So it's not like it's not like a couple scenes. Like that was
no,
a big.
He's like no. One of the stars of the movie.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
It's a movie stealing performance, buddy. Everybody knows that.
I know, right? Right. Who the fuck am I? Who is this guy?
But then Mallrats absolutely bombed. It made no money. It just wasn't. I mean, now there's a new generation of kids, you know, watching it, which is cool. But at the time, it made no money. So I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was already starting to get out of skateboarding. And then luckily, Kevin had Chasing Amy written and
which ironically I saw at the Limley Sunset 5.
You did.
I saw that.
Oh,
movie,
that's
the Limley
awesome.
Sunset 5.
I don't know. Had he not called on that, I don't know what I would have done, because it's not like my agents could have been like, you know, the guy from Mallrats.
You from
know
Monday?
What? Yeah. So that definitely helped.
Just
things.
Like Sam just did.
I politely. Ask.
Mallrats is fun. Mallrats is a fun
no,
movie.
No, I know. I know. We had our make Bridget met you on who did makeup for Cocked met you on Mallrats, right?
Yeah,
she was
did
doing
makeup
for
on Mallrats.
On Mallrats, she told me that
she's been at it for a long time. Yeah.
And she did makeup on True Blood, and I yeah.
You True were Blood. On True Blood. We're even because I haven't really seen.
I mean, the thing is, actors like we don't really watch each other's stuff. Like,
well, that's
really,
the thing is, like when you meet other performers and they go, "I'm sorry, I haven't seen your thing." I'm always like, I don't care. It doesn't. It's fine. I don't expect you to see.
This is the worst thing that somebody can say to me is like, "Oh, I haven't seen True Blood. I'm so sorry."
Right. My favorite,
and
is,
I just want to say, "Fuck, who? I don't fucking care."
My favorite is my wife loves My Name Is Earl.
Oh, that's good.
Or my mom loves that show.
Right,
like it's almost like they're doing it to make
a
point.
Right,
like,
right.
I'm not going to give it up right now, buddy. But I'll give it up enough to let you know that I've got a cousin in Tennessee that loves.
Personally,
My Name
I'm above
Earl.
It. Right. But people that I know that are, quite frankly, stupider.
Right.
they are into the thing that you're doing.
That's such a backhanded compliment.
But then when they want you to sign something, they give you their name. What's your wife's name? Dave. What?
Yeah. So, don't worry about it.
I
watched True Blood for the 7 seasons, right? Was it 7?
Yeah.
I watched 6 seasons. I watched the first episode of season 7, and I got so mad. And again, not your fault. But I thought, I talked about this when Kristen Bauer was on, that the way that Tara died was such a fucking, like, this is a character who's been a major character on the show, and just all of a sudden they're like, she died off screen. Like, a fucking major character dies, and it's off screen, and then you just, like, it's basically her mom is standing there going, she died right over there, and that's it. And I thought, what a fucked up thing to do to your audience, and to the performer, to basically say, like, we know you were a major character for 7 years, but and I got so mad at the way that that was handled that I just felt like, I don't want to see a bunch of characters that I've been watching start to die in ways that are going to piss me off.
Right. Yeah, I know. It was weird because I knew she was going to die, but I didn't know how it was going to be shot. It would be shot like that.
It wasn't shot at all.
Yeah, it was kind of not shot.
They dumped a bucket of goo on the ground. And they're like, there she was.
There should have been like a big,
look out, Minotaurs,
heroic
or whatever.
Fight or something. But yeah, she was just goo. She was vampire goo.
True Blood was a fun show, Jason, because in the beginning, the show was very much what I assume to be kind of an allegory for intolerance. So in the first handful of episodes, there's not a lot of hocus pocus in the show at all. And then clearly something happened, like maybe halfway through the first season, and the first season are like, well, it's a show about vampires, but there aren't really any there's no vampire shit in it. So all of a sudden, like, everyone, that's when you were a shapeshifter, like, everyone just became a thing, and it was it became this, you know, this incredible, like, fairy tale soap opera kind of a show. I loved it.
It got crazy. The first season was kind of chill, and then it just got huge and big, and so many characters, and everybody had powers, and with me, they were planning on waiting until the 10th episode to kind of reveal that, and they kind of wanted to make me sort of a red herring for maybe I was the murdering people in town. But yeah, it was just like, you know, like it was a popcorn and coke, you know, crackhead, like, give me more fantasy, give me more monsters, give me more, you know, more and more and more. And it was kind of great that way.
It was fun. Although I think even they realized that the Weir Panther storyline was a strange dead end.
They did, yeah. But it was hard to keep that up, like to outdo yourself and, you know, make it crazier each week or make it sexier or make it, you know. So it was just tough on the writers.
It is, especially to get
through 7 years that's a lot.
With sci-fi fantasy shows, I feel like there's more of a challenge in the writing because every season, the same thing happened with Buffy too, where it was at the end of a season, it was like, this is the worst thing these characters have ever seen,
right.
It's something apocalyptic, and then the next season they have to figure out, well, what's even more apocalyptic than the apocalypse, and then they have to, like, season after season, keep making something the worst thing in the world, and after a while it just, I don't know how you keep doing that. Yeah. But was the experience fun for you? Did you have a nice time?
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. I mean, it was the being outside all night, you know, in short sleeves or naked was tough.
He was naked a lot because his character could turn into animals, and so he would shift out of his clothes and then he'd shift back and then he'd be totally naked.
Totally. I'd shift into a horse. And then I'd shift back, and my clothes would be 10 miles away.
Did you keep the dick? Could you partially shift?
I would do that sometimes. Yeah, I would hold on a certain like appendages, and yeah.
I'd be uncomfortable in a show if they were like, you got to be naked. I mean, there were scenes where you were just.
Well, a lot of people were naked, but they had sexy lighting and music, and they were like having sex with beautiful people. And I'd just be naked, like in the trees, like
running by a lake. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like standing in front of all the other characters who are clothed, like giving them information, and I'm naked. That was the worst. Like in the last year, I had to do that. And literally everybody in the cast was there almost, and then I was there naked.
I had to do a fair bit of that in Cocked.
Oh, you did.
Really? Yeah.
Yep, a lot of sexy time.
It's Amazon,
so
there's
a lot of nudity.
So there's no content restrictions, right?
Apparently not. No, when they gave me a cock sock and told me to put it on, I was like, well, I guess it's not very restricted over here at Amazon.
Is this part of the audition?
It was crazy.
Yeah, you had that whole montage, and then you also had the stuff at the beginning with those. As my mother calls it, the pornographic part of the show.
There's a few of those. Yeah, that was a little awkward. Yeah. Definitely. Just literally wearing a sock over your wiener.
Yeah, it's weird.
Body makeup. There's a whole to-do with it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
And now I understand what you went through on
True Blood. Did Bridget do your Did she give you spray?
No, it's like you're up against the wall in the hair and makeup trailers, you know, as if you're being frisked, you know, your leg, and she's putting makeup on your ass cheeks.
I mean, and by the way, dudes do not have it bad, and they're like women have it way worse with that kind of stuff in the entertainment business, but it's still, you still can't help but be self-conscious, and things are shot in HD, and you're like, I don't know.
But the makeup thing is weird. Like, for the first 4 years of True Blood, Bridget or Lana would come in and into my trailer and put body makeup on me. And the first 4 years, it was with a sponge or a thing. So I'd be standing there for like 45 minutes with, you know, somebody kneeling in front of me putting this makeup on. I mean, it was so bizarre. And then finally, we got a spray, and there was a spray. But Bridget, she'd come in, and it was weird. It was like a weird date because I'd be like, oh, this is going to be so awkward. I got to have music, and should I offer her a Coke? Or I don't know. So you'd be doing that. And then she's dating this dude who's the roughest-looking Teamster on the show. And like and she leaves, and I'm always like, "Hey Jeff, what's up?
You get a boner while my wife was
exactly. He's like, no, nothing happened, man.
No boner, dude.
Nothing happened, dude. We're cool, right? And Jeff like is so serious. I mean, he's the sweetest guy, but he's like the scary. He has like a mohawk and like tats everywhere, and it would always be this weird thing, like, "What's up, bro? Nothing, you know? Like, it's not really a date. Like, I was naked, you know, but like nothing happened." You know?
She was being paid to do it. Okay, that sounded weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it was part of, and especially on True Blood, being naked around you guys, like Joe Manganiello and Ryan Kwanten, like they're men on that show that are like the most perfect human specimens that you could possibly.
They're like if you drew a superhero, that's what.
Yeah,
they're,
in real life,
like Joe Manganiello literally is like a superhero.
He really is.
Like literally. You know, and so's Ryan. I mean, there were a few people on our show that were. And then there was me. I was literally starving myself so I wouldn't have a belly. Like, I couldn't even go for... I mean, I didn't even... You know, I couldn't even go for the six-pack. I was just going for passable, you know. And also, the first year, I didn't know this was going to be the deal. The first year, I was like, I'm a fucking bartender, man. I've got, like... I'm not going to work out, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I'm a bartender, and no, but we're not doing that, are we, guys? And then freaking Ryan Kwanten, who's like, I mean, again, like so cut and ripped, you know, and then even Steven, I was just like, come on, guys. Jeez, really? We're going to have to do that? All right. So then season two, like I had to exercise and
give a shit about your body.
Shit.
How are you guys? How are you feeling now? Like, you know. Do you, because I don't have kids, so I'm always grilling people about their kids. Is it that thing where it's like, you don't understand, it's the greatest thing you could ever experience in your home? Like, is it that as amazing? Was it not amazing before? Did you have the light bulb moment?
You have your moments where it's amazing and you remember how amazing it is for sure. But it's real. We're human beings. It's real life. It's, you know, it's hard. It's hard as shit.
So hard.
It's
man.
Super hard.
Like, my first response when people at this, because I have 3-year-old twins, right? Because they're 3 right now. When people ask me about it, is not, my first thing is not like, oh my God, it's so amazing. It's like, I'm like, it's fucking hard, man. It's really hard. I'm really tired. They're awesome. They're great, but it's really relentlessly difficult.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm glad, I'm so happy that they're a lot. I mean, it's a total miracle. But it's definitely, you know, if you don't have kids and you don't want them, definitely don't have them because there's pros and cons, you know?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I think it's something.
It's not like I'm saying everybody should have kids because it's, you know, it's, you know.
Well, yeah, you should, there are definitely enough people in the world. It's not like, human shortage, you know, like there's enough people in the world. It's not like, I think in the classical worlds, like in the, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years ago, it's just the population density was not what it is now. And so, you know, it was like, oh, we need to expand our tribes. We need to expand our numbers so that our immediate community can establish some type of social dominance. I mean, there was a real, you know, survival of the fittest, but with groups. And so it made a lot of sense. Like, everyone have kids, have as many kids. But now I feel like, don't just have kids just to have kids. Like, have them because you want to share your life and foster a human and, you know, like, do good things and, you know, pass on. I don't know. Yeah. I just keep wondering if I'm going to hit like 60 and go, ah, fuck, I really want, I should have passed my jeans on, you know, but I didn't.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to see your jeans passed on, to see like your face and their faces. And it's, you know, it's pretty cool.
It is for me a constant reminder of trying to keep my shit together.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. what I love so much mm-hmm. about it. You know, we all get so wrapped up in ourselves, and I need more of this, and I need to do more of that, and I need more time, and I this, and I that. And you see your kids, and you go, fuck, they're so cool, man. You know, I got to...
Yeah.
And then you become more aware of the importance of taking care of them, and then you step outside of yourself a little bit more. That constant challenge is really cool. Keeps you a little more humble, I think. You know, mm-hmm. so that's been cool for me.
Instead of being so well, yeah. I mean, I will admit that I'm clearly like, no, I want me time. Like I'm still
I'm still selfish. Any parent does, and it just teaches balance. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It teaches balance between you time and you know, and when you stop and say, what do you need, sweetie? Because it's so easy to go, oh, I'll be right there. When I actually take those moments to stop and look into my daughter's eyes and say, what do you need, sweetie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dad, this and this and that. All right, let me help you with that. I usually end up walking away feeling a lot better about myself than I do when I go, go ask your mom. Right. You know what I mean? Or I'll get to you in 15 minutes or whatever. When I take those moments, they kind of ground me for a second. Like you find you need those moments of being grounded for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a cool aspect of it for me.
And yours are three, so they're just starting to have, like, express themselves in ways that are, I would imagine, right?
Well, they've been, like, their own persons and unique personalities and very expressive throughout their whole lives. But they are speaking more, you know, and it's just insanity, you know? It's like... it's a lot of fun, but we were talking about it, like, you know, when you're... an adult, you kind of want to sit. You want to sit down, you know? you want to just hang a little bit. But all they want to do is run around in circles and play pirate and play good guys and bad guys and chase them and monster. And that's awesome, man. If you just were a person and you jump into that scenario, and you could do that for 45 minutes and have a blast, you know? But if you live it, like, every day, all day, it's still fun. But you just want to sit down every once in a while, you know. Like you want, but it's interesting when you have 3-year-old boys.
Get a lot of sitting down time at home. Yeah.
I'm trying to make a point here, but they're particularly at a really high energy level phase, and it's, you know, it's crazy and fun and a blast and exhausting and, you know, all
they're just generating so many cells and so much energy.
I just remember, and I'm so disappointed in myself sometimes because I remember when I was their age. Going, how come all the adults are sitting down? Like, we're playing. Don't they want to play?
Right.
And I remember saying, I will never be that. I will never do that. And now I find myself, you know, like, when we're outside, like, pulling up a chair to sit down and be like, I'm going to watch you guys play and talk to you, and I'm going to sit down right here. And I'm like, God, that's so lame, man. But we only have so much energy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know?
would it be your dream? I mean... would you ever say, like, well, maybe there's a point where I have enough of things that I need where I just wouldn't work for a while just to be with the kids? Or do you feel like, no, it's very important for me to... I still, as much as it's important to give stuff to them, I still need to do stuff that's fulfilling to me as a human being as well. Like, where do you... what's the delineation between satisfying your own needs and satisfying mm-hmm. the kids' needs?
Well, I mean, as an actor, I mean, unless you're on a, like... CSI Miami or something where you're working 11 months and you're the lead character.
Right.
And you're never home. Like for me, on True Blood, I'd work for 5 months and then I'd have all this time off. Like you end up as an actor having a lot of time off to be with your kids. So I feel like I have as a dad, and Jason, it's probably the same for you. I don't know. Like I feel like I've spent way more time with my kids than the average father. Like way more.
Right.
So I feel like, in a way, I almost feel like I need more time. I don't know. Not that I need more time away, but I don't know. It's like it's not really my choice. I'm kind of lucky because I get to make a. I'm so lucky, like so lucky, to make a living doing what I like to do and also get to have a lot of time with the kids. Like, that just is crazy luck. And hopefully I'll get to keep doing that. But you have to keep working, and you never know how long your jobs are going to be. Or if you go out of town.
Yeah, what if you got called to Prague? What if you've got to be in Prague for 6 months? Then what, do you not do it, or do you figure out how to get the family there?
I guess, I don't know. You take it day by day. I haven't had too many tough choices yet. But I've had a couple where I've been out of town for a while, and you kind of fly back and forth. You go, am I going to take the kids to Pittsburgh? Or am I going to just fly back and forth as much as possible? And you figure it out, and I decide to fly back.
You shouldn't take anyone to Pittsburgh. I'm teasing Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was fun. Pittsburgh. I performed in Pittsburgh at the end of last year. It was fine. It was fun. Right. It was fun.
I kind of grew up near Pittsburgh. I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, which is a great freaking city. And
do you go back there much?
No, which is terrible. I should. My parents moved, so I don't go back.
It's easy for you. You're just like Huntington Beach, right? You're just like south on the 405.
No more family there, though. Oh. So I never make it down to what they now call the OC. I'm rarely down. I rarely go beyond the Orange Curtain. Yeah.
You don't go back to your roots and go, ah. Just go back and...
Dude, you should just go and just start skating. Do you ever just show up places? I mean, you must. Just start show up places and start skating and... People are like, oh, hey, Jason Lee, man.
Around LA, skate parks. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
There's some good parks here, man, for sure.
I've told you, I want to get some pads and get padded up and go to a wooden park. I don't want to do concrete because.
You'll be like the Kmart dad. Yeah. With like the little wrist cards and like your helmet with the hair coming out the sides.
Yeah. Like a mattress pad. Yeah. Like one of those egg crates just around your body. I'd be that guy too.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. There's a great skate park called The Cove in Santa Monica.
Mm.
It's amazing.
What's great about it?
It's all concrete and it's really smooth. There's a big bowl, there's a smaller bowl, and then there's like a little street course area with banks and stuff.
I want to get in a half pipe and just start.
Yeah.
Start going.
The Cove would be good.
Cove would be good.
Yeah.
I read something online that said that you did stand up, but I don't
know. No, I never did stand up.
Yeah, there was a thing. I think it might even be on your Wikipedia page. It says, you know, Jason Lee is a stand-up comedian, writer, actor. I'm like, I didn't know Jason did stand-up.
No, I've never done stand-up, ever. I don't know what that would be like.
Maybe you did before there was a horrible skating accident and you forgot.
What if I have this illustrious stand-up career that I've totally forgotten about?
Like Sam's bringing it up on YouTube.
I should start wearing a helmet.
Dude, I've got 10 shows right here. Jason, you're fucking funny.
The Laugh Factor? That's me?
Okay, look, here's the thing. You were never a skater. It's just after the accident we wanted to make you feel cooler. So we said you were a skater.
I had a stand-up accident and then I thought I was a skater. Right. Yeah.
Do you like performing live? Do you like performing live at all?
Well, I don't think I ever have performed live.
No?
Never. I've never done theater. I've never done stand up.
You must have done panels and stuff like where you have to like Comic-Con panels or any kind of like live panels.
Yeah, but a lot of that stuff I've done with Kevin Smith, and when you're with Kevin Smith, he of course does all the talking. and he's really, really fucking good at that.
Yeah.
And I've done a few for like My Name Is Earl over the years, like what's the TV, the TSAs or something,
the TCAs,
that kind of stuff. But I've never really, you know, done anything where it's like a performance or anything. But yeah.
I feel like that show ended abruptly. Did it seem that way too?
NBC pulled the plug.
I mean, I thought the show. I thought it had gotten to the point where it's like, okay, like if you can get up to 3 seasons, it feels like, okay, you'll probably be around for a while. Like seasons one and two are tough.
Yeah. It was just four.
That's such a weird number for television.
What I thought was odd too was it ended on a to be continued. Right? And what Greg Garcia, the creator, tried to do was at least get them to agree to do like maybe a special like two episode ender to sort of end Earl's list or something. Nobody bit on it. There was nothing. Mm. It was just done, dead, gone.
So maybe if Amazon picks up cock, you go, okay, I'll do the series.
I'd like to do it just in a classic contract, like Meatballs style, like Earl road trip movie or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? That would be awesome.
Wait, there is absolutely no reason that you couldn't do that.
No, I bet Greg Garcia said he'd be into doing it, and I think the fan base is big enough to where, it would just be a fun romp. It would be silly. It would be goofy, fun for the fans.
It would cost nothing. It would cost nothing
for super cheap. Shoot it in 4 weeks.
You have a built-in audience.
Yep. You're a part of that built-in audience, right?
I am.
Oh, yeah. My work.
Oh, yeah.
Love Mallrats. He was talking about...
Yeah, he was talking about how much of a big fan he was.
Big fan of all your work.
How surprised he was that I wasn't a trained actor, but how good my performance was.
Well, Sam particularly pointed out that he was amazed that the size of the rats in Mallrats were...
Yeah.
Like, he thought that was really compelling.
And the end scene where they come in on the mall and they take over.
It's a horror movie,
they start biting. Yeah,
scary.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah. It's like Ben or Willard. But with Kevin Smith, my favorite, the part of the movie that still resonates in my head because I still to this day have not been able to do it is I cannot see the stereogram pictures where you're supposed to like fade
your eyes.
I can't
see them either,
and it drives me. And that was the first movie where I was like, this properly and publicly expresses the frustration and rage that I feel that everyone around. There's a scene where they're looking at where people, you know, like those pictures that got popular for a while where they look like noise, and then you're supposed to blur your eyes and you see an image come out three-dimensionally, the stereograms. I've never been able to see one, and people just walk up and go, Statue of Liberty! I'm like, where are you fucking seeing that?
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. On set, everybody was trying to figure it out. I couldn't.
And people talk to you, and when you can't, people talk to you like that you're an idiot. They go, just blur your eyes.
I feel like it's blurring.
I know, I feel like it's bad for you to see that. Like, it's bad for you to like cross your eyes and blur your eyes. You know, like, I feel like you'll never get out of that.
And it probably is hypnotizing you in crazy ways. To think you were a skater and not a stand-up comedian. I think an Earl movie would be incredible.
That'd be fun.
I don't see any reason.
I might see that.
I don't see any reason. I don't see any reason why that couldn't happen. Because, especially if you're, I mean, look, I get that television is not that. First and foremost, they're not trying to service their audience. They're basically trying to do whatever makes them what they feel, you know, like affects their bottom line the most. But as a fan of stuff. It fucking sucks when a show – like I still have series that ended that didn't resolve that are just weird open loops in the back of my head.
Yeah.
That I just want like a little bit of closure. It's you know, that's why Breaking Bad was my favorite finale of all time, because I was like, well, it's all wrapped up. I never have to – you know, I don't have to wonder about it anymore. I think we had a fairly successful X-Files 2015 campaign.
Yeah, we did.
I think we should.
Yeah,
I think we should. I think we should do an Earl movie campaign.
Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Earl movie. Hashtag Earl movie. Earl movie. My name is movie. Earl movie. I think Earl movie. Yeah.
Earl movie's good. Yeah, I get it all the time. At least you know a few times a week.
I mean, you're gonna tell me
what happened to Earl. What is it? Are we ever gonna see him finish his list and?
You can't tell me that just, you know, for a few million bucks, they couldn't make that and make their money back on that, just like selling it digitally or putting it on Netflix or Amazon or something. I mean, like, that would be a...
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, all that shit, though, it's really simple to go, like, why don't they just ... And then lawyers start popping up. And you're like, oh, this is why this person has the rights to this and this. And networks will squat on stuff, even if they have no intention. They're just like... You know, it'd be like if you were starving and then there was a rich guy and he had a full breakfast. You're like, can I have that toast? No, you're not eating it. But you're not going to have it. Like, they just don't want other people to have their intellectual property. But but I really feel like if we could generate enough interest that then that's what would make them listen, because networks like to hear things like social media right now. So we'll try. We'll try to make
Let's do it.
Let's talk it up.
2016,
baby. Can I be in it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But you have to watch Mallrats first.
You can be in it, though.
Your audition for the movie is he's going to quiz you about Mallrats.
You can be in it only if you're a nude in a tree.
Nude in a tree.
You have to be nude in a tree.
Wow.
A la True Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was never in a tree, so maybe.
Well, you said that you were the guy that would be nude in a tree. And everybody else was looking super sexy.
Oh, what I meant to say was nude in the midst of a bunch of big trees.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
I pictured you naked.
It's a good image. I'll be nude in a tree.
Hunched up shaking cold on a tree branch.
I'll do that.
Where are my clothes? Has anybody seen my clothes?
How did I get up here?
I was a hawk, and now I'm a human. I've never been nude in a tree, so I'll do it.
Well, this is the movie will kick things up a notch. It'll take you from nude in front of a tree to being nude on a tree.
On a tree.
Yeah.
So this is I enjoy this type of a mission. So we'll do whatever we can to try to make this happen. You're on board. Did you talk to Jamie or anyone else? Like they have other people would be on board. No, of course totally they would.
Yep.
I work with Jamie.
Yeah?
Yeah. She's a firecracker.
She totally is. She was so great as Joy on that show, man.
Yeah.
What did you work with her in?
It was Showtime's second year of putting out shows, and it was a show called Going to California that Scott Rosenberg created. And me and this guy, actor Brad Hinkey, was like a cross-country, like these two dudes going to California. And we had incredible guest stars. We had Jamie Presley and Vince Vaughn and like these crazy people that came on and did it, and it got canceled. But it was fun.
You never – don't get attached.
Don't get attached.
Never get attached. Are you good with – how many seasons of True Blood were you in before you were like, okay, I think we'll be doing this for a while?
Never.
Really? You always felt like it was going to be the last season?
They never told us. I mean, once we hit season four, I think we peaked season four, I figured we'll definitely get five. But then after – every year it was sort of like, I don't know, probably, but I don't know.
I'll tell you what I'm going to miss. I don't know why. It's just a weirdly comforting thing. But going to Comic-Con in San Diego and staying at the Hilton Bayfront – all the elevators were always papered with True Blood. It was just all you, and it was always the first reminder to me that I was at Comic-Con, because it's right when you check into the hotel and you go there, like, it's Comic-Con because there's vampires that are on the elevator.
Yeah,
and we're not gonna have that anymore.
No, I know that Comic-Con was crazy. I mean, that was the perfect kind of storm for our show, and that was, we were so. It was like being the Beatles. Like we were so huge at Comic-Con, and then like you go home the next day and it's so funny like how you can be really famous and popular in one geographic spot, and then like a few feet out of that spot, like nobody cares.
Just plain elevators.
Yeah, you're just like
Yeah,
yeah. That's kind of what Comic-Con was.
Have you been? Have you been to?
I went to Comic-Con once, maybe for Mallrats.
Yeah.
Oh wow. And in the movie, I play this comic book kid that's his world. I don't know anything about comic books.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin said, we're going to have a screening of Mallrats at Comic-Con. I said, I'm scared. I don't want to go. What if I'm cornered by all these comic book kids and they start asking me all these questions about Spider-Man? I don't know where he gets his web from. I don't know. Yeah, well, I was genuinely scared that I was going to be. What's your favorite comic book? Why?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm literally at Comic-Con being asked those questions, and I'm answering by saying Superman.
Superman.
I didn't want to disappoint.
Right? Did you pretend? I mean, did you give answers?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to. You don't want people to go, he's a fraud.
But
he's an actor.
That's right.
We thought he was a real comic book guy.
But that'd be the same of you getting a True Blood plan when someone goes, shift into a beagle. And you're like, no, that was
yeah, exactly,
a real,
totally.
A real
it's like,
guy.
I can't really.
You can always just skate away, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And then hit a pebble and fall in the
face. The pebble.
Oh, he doesn't know comic books and he can't skate. Fuck this guy.
He's out of there.
So, Cocked is available now on Amazon.
Yeah.
And you should watch it so that they can make more of them. And Earl Movie. Hashtag Earl Movie. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to make this happen. Oh, also, I'm sure you get this a lot. I fucking loved Syndrome. Loved.
Me too, man.
That fucking movie, The Incredibles, is one of my favorite animated movies of all time.
Me too.
You were right, a voice in The Incredibles? I saw that.
He played Syndrome!
Listen. I guarantee you, Jason's never seen a single movie out of that. I can almost guarantee that.
All right, well, let's find out.
So let's
put
this.
We'll play a little game.
Let's put this like. Oh, Sam has it to rest.
I'm gonna.
We don't need to do it because it's.
No,
I know it's true.
I want to
talk about The Incredibles because that was such a good movie.
So he played the villain. He was Syndrome.
You were the villain. Okay, I got to watch it again because I love that movie.
Okay,
so Brad Bird is one of the most talented people I've ever worked with.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable director.
Absolutely.
Chris, I don't want to hear a list of my movies because they're really like, I really, because it's just going to be no. And also, I just don't want to hear that list. Like, I really don't want to hear
The Fault in Our Stars. It's a popular movie.
I have not seen that. No.
God.
Well, you probably saw 2014's Me, where he played David.
No.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody's seen that movie.
It sounds terrible coming from an actor, but I don't go to the movies a lot. No, yeah, I don't watch much TV, man.
He lives in the, you know.
Well, I'm sure you saw White Rabbit in 2013.
No.
Okay.
White Rabbit hasn't come out. It's coming.
That was a trick question,
This is a good plug because it's coming out February 13th.
Going back to me and being in The Incredibles, you know, I found it really interesting, the process of voiceover recording for an animated movie. And I really like the Pixar folks. They're just great people. I would like it to see a sequel of The Incredibles.
I am shocked that never happened. I mean, like, that's such a... Trilogy-itis has gripped the entertainment industry. You think The Incredibles was huge. I'm so surprised that didn't come back.
I had heard that Brad Bird was a candidate to direct the new Star Wars, too.
Right.
That's the ultimate choice for me. Just to see a new Star Wars trilogy with Brad Bird at the helm.
There are a couple people that I think... I think J.J. is going to do a great job with Force Awakens, but... I think Brad would do an amazing one. I think Guillermo del Toro would do an amazing, like a weird, dark.
Brad Bird's got the humor, though.
Yeah.
He's got that. Mm-hmm. He's got the humor. The Incredibles is amazing.
Yeah, such good humor.
I'm sure they'll do another one. They have to do another Incredibles. And now they can turn those movies around much faster. When I recorded for The Incredibles, they had already been working on it for like 7 years or something. I recorded it. Wow. And then 2 years later, it came out.
Can't pitch a short film to you?
Yeah.
My name is Syndrome. And Syndrome basically goes through and has to like do this makeup list for like all of the evil things that he did.
I like it.
All right, good.
Brad Bird, if you're listening. Greg Garcia, if you're listening. Those guys would come in.
Just have a lunch.
Lawyers.
Right.
Lawyers, if you're listening. Including but not limited to, so Oral Movie we'll work on, and then people should go see Cocked and go see it in front of their computers, and thank you guys for being here. It was really awesome. Nice to meet you. I'm sorry we never. I think there was one Halloween because the neighborhood we lived in had this amazing Halloween walk.
Yeah, I remember
because it's not a safe. It's weird having lived in the hills. It feels like there should not be any pedestrian traffic because it's curvy and the streets are tight.
No sidewalks.
No sidewalks, and people just whip through up there, and constantly people walking their dogs, walking their kids. I'm surprised more people don't get plowed by irresponsible drivers, but that area does this neighborhood Halloween walk. Uh-huh. Where they place adults at all the intersections and they keep traffic slow, and it starts like on one street because all the streets are named oak. So there's like High Oak and Green Oak and Wild Oak and Spreading Oak and Oak. And the kids just start with the families all the way, and they would all convene in front of our houses, like that little five-way stop.
Yeah.
And it's the only time I've ever felt the sense of a neighborhood in Los Angeles. Yeah. I've never felt it any other time. But it was such a great area.
I had the Earl mustache then, so I think that year I went as Magnum PI. I had the Magnum PI hat, the Hawaiian shirt, the lei. It was the shorts.
Mm-hmm. You're a Magnum fan, or just was it the aesthetic?
I mean, you know, when you have a mustache as good as the one I had, you're quite competitive.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you know, but that time I wanted to show my respect for somebody else with a pretty awesome TV mustache.
I just wanted to get you guys to weigh in on whether or not you thought Higgins was in fact Robin Masters. Did you ever hear that theory? Higgins, who was essentially supposed to be like basically the house servant to this guy Robin Masters. There's a theory that he was actually Robin Masters.
Wow.
But I feel like that didn't catch any traction with you guys, so I'll just get on my skateboard.
Look, I've hit my head a lot, buddy. I can't. I'm a little slow.
I know you had a great stand-up career.
Yeah,
you didn't even know about it. All right. Sam, Jason, are you guys on? Are you on Twitter at all?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. Yeah, I'm going to tweet this out.
I'm just on the Instagram thing, the thing with the camera where you post pictures.
Yeah, you put a little picture.
But I'm not even on that. I'm not on Instagram. Yeah. So.
Well, you guys should.
We're tag teaming different.
Well, that way I can post skate videos and skate photos and stuff like that. You know,
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
I know. I got to get on that.
And what is your company making? Do you make boards?
Yeah, Stereo Skateboards. It's a very retro design based company that's been around for 20 some odd years now. We're still going. It's harder now than it was, especially for a you know, a smaller brand like Stereo. But we've been around since 92. We make boards. We have a team of skaters. We put out videos. And yeah.
Did you start the company?
In 92.
Wow.
Yeah, up in SF. I was 22 and my partner was 20. He does most of the running of it, and he's the creative mind behind it. And yeah, it's a cool little scene, man. It's still going.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. We're at the end.
All righty.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.